This is Audible.
Gildan Media presents Your Coach in a Box, affordable, life-changing audio programs.
Hello, I'm Brian Tracy, and welcome to Get Smart. How to think, decide, act, and get better results in everything you do. Introduction. Unleash the imprisoned splendor. There is a poem by Robert Browning that says, "Truth is within ourselves. It takes no rise from outward things, whatever you may believe. There is an inmost center in us all where truth abides in fullness. And to know rather consists in opening out a way whence the imprisoned splendor may escape rather than effecting an entry for a light supposed to be without." William James of Harvard wrote, "The greatest revolution of my generation is the discovery that people, by changing their inner attitudes of mind, can change the outer aspects of their lives." You and your mind are extraordinary. You have 100 billion brain cells, each connected by ganglia and neurons to as many as 20,000 other cells. The total number of thoughts that you can think is therefore equal to 100 billion to the 20,000th power. This means that according to brain expert Tony Buzan, the number of thoughts that you can think is equal to the number 1 followed by 8 pages of zeros, more potential ideas than the number of all the molecules in the known universe. The question is, how are you using this powerful mental supercomputer? You have the mental ability right now to set any goal and achieve everything you could ever want or hope for in life. By using your brain, your ability to think and create with greater precision and accuracy, you can solve any problem, overcome every obstacle, and achieve any goal you can set for yourself. Your mental supercomputer is so powerful that you could not use your full potential if you had 100 lifetimes. 10% of potential. When I was 21, I was impressed when I heard that the average person uses only 10% of his or her mental ability. I later learned that the true number was closer to 2%. Most people have enormous reserves of mental capacity that they fail to use, that they are apparently saving up for some good reason. Imagine that you had inherited a bank account containing $1 million and growing regularly with interest. But you only ever accessed or spent $20,000 of this amount because you lacked the necessary code to acquire the rest of your money. The remainder of this wealth was yours, but you couldn't get at it because you did not know the correct account number that would release these funds to you. This is the situation of most people today. They have enormous stores of mental ability that they habitually fail to use. In the pages ahead, you will learn a series of simple, practical, proven ways to tap into more and more of your natural thinking talents and abilities. You do not need to become more than you are or someone different. You only need to become all that you are already and unleash more of your existing mental powers. Learn the combinations. Life is like a combination lock, only with more numbers. All combination locks work in the same way. You turn to the first number, back past that number to the second number, and forward to the third number. If you have the right numbers, the lock opens, whether it is a bicycle lock or a great vault in a major bank. Imagine that you knew all the numbers but one to unlock the success code and whatever you wanted to do. Lacking one key number, you could spin the dial forever and never get into the riches contained inside your own mental vault. But with one extra number in the correct order, the vault would open, and you could achieve extraordinary things with your life. This book contains some of the best combinations ever discovered in terms of thinking tools that enable you to make quantum leaps in your life. In many cases, what holds you back is simply a matter of perspective, your particular way of looking at things. Your explanatory style. Dr. Martin Seligman of the University of Pennsylvania calls this your explanatory style. the way that you explain or interpret things to yourself. This can be as simple as the difference between optimism and pessimism, the glass seen as half full or as half empty. The optimist looks for the good and what can be gained from every situation, while the pessimist looks for the problem or downside in each situation. But as Josh Billings, the Western humorist, once said, "It ain't what a man knows what hurts him, it's what he knows that ain't true." Ignorance is not bliss. The failure to use the appropriate thinking tools and styles in a particular area or situation can be disastrous and often lead to overwhelming failure. Look for the good. Very often, when you change your perspective, you see things differently, make different decisions, and get different results. Napoleon Hill, author of the success classic Think and Grow Rich, said that within every problem or difficulty there lies the seed of an equal or greater benefit or advantage. After interviewing more than 500 of the wealthiest self-made multimillionaires in America, he found that they all had certain qualities in common. One of these common denominators was that the wealthy people in his research had developed the habit of always seeking the valuable lesson in every setback or difficulty, and they always found it. Most of their fortunes had come about as a result of applying the lessons they had learned through failure and hardship in developing breakthrough products and services that eventually made them rich. But without the temporary failures and the lessons they contained, they would still be working for wages. Here is a simple way to transform your thinking to that of the most positive and successful people in our society. Think about the biggest problem that you have in your life today. Now, imagine that this problem has been sent to you as a gift, to teach you something. Ask yourself, what is the lesson or lessons that I can learn from this situation that can help me to be happier and more successful in the future? Perhaps your biggest problem today is not a problem at all. Perhaps it's an opportunity. As Henry Ford said, failure is merely an opportunity to more intelligently begin again. A difference of perspective. You've heard the story of the six wise men, all blind, attempting to describe an elephant to each other. Each of the wise men touches and describes the elephant differently. All are correct from their individual perspectives. One touches the ear and says that the elephant is like a thick blanket. Another touches the tusk and describes the elephant as sharp and pointed. One feels the leg and describes it as being like a tree trunk. One touches the side of the elephant and describes it as a wall. One grabs the tail and describes it as a rope. The last wise man touches the head and describes it as a rock. Each of them is right from his own perspective, but all of them are wrong in many ways because of their failure to see the elephant, the situation, in its totality. What is your perspective, your attitude about yourself and your world? Anais Nin wrote, "We do not see the world as it is, but as we are." The Great Discovery. Perhaps the greatest discovery in human history is that you become what you think about most of the time. Your beliefs, either positive or negative, helpful or hurtful, largely determine everything you do and how you do it. So what do you think about most of the time, and how do you think about it? As Wayne Dyer wrote, "You don't believe what you see what you already believe." Jim Rohn said, "Everything you have in your life you have attracted to yourself by the person you are. You can change your life because you can change your thinking. You can change the person you are." My best-selling book is entitled, "Change Your Thinking, Change Your Life." And its title message is true. As you learn and apply these different ways of thinking, you will begin to change the person you are inside. By the law of correspondence, which says, "As within, so without," your outer life will begin to correspond to and mirror or reflect your inner life. As your inner life changes, your outer life changes to reflect this new thinking. Shakespeare wrote, "There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so." Let's begin to learn about and think the ways that the most successful and happy people think so that you can get the results and enjoy the rewards that the most successful people enjoy. Chapter 1. Long-Time Perspective versus Short-Time Perspective. James Allen wrote, "Men are anxious to improve their circumstances, but are unwilling to improve themselves. They therefore remain bound. The man who does not shrink from self-crucifixion can never fail to accomplish the object upon which his heart is set. This is as true of earthly as of heavenly things. Even the man whose sole object is to acquire wealth must be prepared to make great personal sacrifices before he can accomplish his object. And how much more so he who would realize a strong and well-poised life. The better you think, the better results you will get, and the more successful you will be in every area. The most important measure, the only measure of the quality of your thinking, is the results you get, the consequences of what you decide to do as a result of the decisions you make." Milton Friedman, the economist, once wrote, "The best measure of quality thinking is your ability to accurately predict the consequences of your ideas and subsequent actions." His point was that economic theory, divorced from what actually happened when that theory was applied, was clearly incorrect. Consequences are everything. The only question is, did your idea work or not? Some people are confused about the importance of long-term consequences. They think that their intentions are most important, not the results. This is a major cause of confusion in our society today. They say, if I intend for good things to happen as the result of my ideas, my decisions, and my actions, and they don't, you can't blame me. Your ability to accurately foresee and predict the consequences of your decisions and actions is the true measure of your intelligence. What is intelligence? Intelligence is not a matter of IQ, grades in school, or years of study. Intelligence is instead a way of acting. This means that if you act intelligently, you are smart. If you act stupidly, you are stupid, irrespective of grades or measures on IQ tests. What then, by definition, is an intelligent act? The answer is simple. An intelligent act is something that you do that moves you closer to something that you really want. A stupid act is something that does not move you closer to something you want, or even worse, moves you away. You personally define a smart or stupid act when you decide what you want and what you don't want. As Winston Churchill said, "I long ago stopped listening to what people said. Instead, I look at what they do." Behavior is the only truth. Action is everything. How can you tell what a person really wants, thinks, feels, believes, and is committed to? Simple. You just look at his or her actions. It's not what people say, wish, hope, or intend that counts. It's only what they do, and especially what they do when faced with temptation or put under pressure. Someone says, "I want to be successful in my career and in life." He actually believes it. But then observe his behavior. This person arrives at work at the last possible minute, leaves at the first possible minute, and hurries home so that he doesn't miss the latest episode of his favorite television show. Clearly, based on his behavior, his goal is not to be successful in his career, but rather to watch television. How do you know? Because that's exactly what he's doing every night after work. Did it work? The only real measure of your decisions and actions is, did it work? Did your action, based on your thinking, move you towards something that you wanted or something that is important to you? There are two laws that trip people up all the time in personal life, in politics, and in international affairs. They are the law of unintended consequences and the law of perverse consequences. The economist Henry Hazlitt, in his classic Economics in One Lesson, wrote that human beings are self-seeking. Therefore, every action is an attempt to improve one's conditions in some way. People always seek the fastest and easiest way to get the things they want as soon as possible, with little consideration of secondary consequences. Hazlitt said that the desired result of any action is always an improvement in conditions of some kind. The improvement is the primary consequence aimed at. It is always positive. All action is focused on improvement of some kind. Consider the consequences. but it is the secondary and tertiary consequences, what happens afterwards and after that, that are most important. The law of unintended consequences says that in many cases an act or behavior brings about immediate positive results in the short term, but the long-term consequences can be quite negative. For example, a young man quits school to take a job to earn cash so that he can buy a car, socialize, go out with girls, and have an enjoyable life. These are all positive and immediate aims and goals that young people want to enjoy. However, the consequences of a lack of education are often a lifetime of depressed earnings, little upward mobility, and the strong likelihood of the individual's never reaching his or her full potential. Creating something worse. The law of perverse consequences is what happens when the results of an apparently positive action turn out to create a situation that is far worse than if nothing had been done at all. For example, the immediate benefit of giving money to people who need it in our society is to help them and provide for them in the short term. The perverse consequences can be that the individual becomes addicted to free money, drops out of the workforce, becomes dependent on handouts, and loses his pride, self-esteem, and self-respect. The individual ends up much worse off than if nothing had been done at all. In society, the primary reason for social programs, giving money to the less fortunate, is always an attempt to help them to improve the quality of their lives. But the perverse consequences can become a lifetime of dependency and frustrated potential. Think ahead. In chess, with many pieces and many possible moves, your success is based on your ability to accurately anticipate or predict the moves of your opponent. In life, your success is largely determined by your ability to play down the chessboard and to make those moves that lead to ultimate success or victory, however you define it. Dr. Edward Banfield of Harvard studied upward social and economic mobility in the United States and other countries for almost 50 years. He was looking for the reasons why some individuals and families moved up from lower socioeconomic classes to higher socioeconomic classes, generation by generation, sometimes starting at laboring jobs and becoming wealthy in one lifetime. Why did this happen to a small group of people and not to others? Today, in 2015, in the United States alone, there are more than 10 million millionaires, most of them self-made. That is, they started with nothing and passed the million-dollar mark in the course of a single working lifetime. In addition, according to Forbes magazine, 2015, there are 1,826 billionaires, with 290 new billionaires in 2015 alone. 66% of these billionaires are first generation, self-made. They started with nothing and earned it all in one lifetime. The common denominator. Banfield wanted to know the common denominator of these people worldwide. He summarized his findings in a remarkable book, The Unheavenly City, which was widely criticized and quite controversial. It flew in the face of what many people wanted to believe, that poverty and welfare were largely inflicted on innocent victims who had no choice or control over what had happened to them. His conclusion was simple and largely irrefutable. In diagnosing the economic success or failure of individuals, he concluded that time perspective was the overwhelmingly important factor. Banfield divided society into seven classes, from the lowest to the highest: lower-lower class, upper-lower class, lower-middle class, middle-middle class, upper-middle class, lower-upper class, and upper-upper class. It turned out that at each level of socioeconomic achievement, the individuals practiced longer and longer time perspective. Regardless of where they had come from, their level of education, or their current situation, their time perspective was the only consistent difference in their conditions. Time perspective and income. At the lowest socioeconomic level, lower, lower class, the time perspective was often only a few hours or minutes, such as in the case of the hopeless alcoholic or drug addict who thinks only about the next drink or dose. At the highest level, those who are second or third generation wealthy Their time perspective was many years, decades, even generations into the future. It turns out that successful people are intensely future-oriented. They think about the future most of the time. Peter Drucker said that the primary job of the leader, especially in business, is to think about the future. No one else is tasked with that responsibility. This is your responsibility as well. The top people in every society projected years, even decades, into the future when they made their day-to-day decisions. They thought carefully about what might happen before they made important or irrevocable commitments. Here's a great discovery. The very act of thinking long-term sharpens your perspective and dramatically improves the quality of short-term decision-making. Because you become what you think about, the very act of long-term thinking changes the way you think and act in the present, thereby increasing the likelihood of greater success in the future. Determine your future intent. In 1994, Gary Hamel and C.K. Prahalad wrote a breakthrough book on business strategy entitled Competing for the Future. In this book, they popularized the concept of future intent. They wrote that the greater clarity you have regarding where you want to be in the future, the easier it is for you to make correct decisions in the present. One of their most popular ideas was that if your goal is to be a leader in your industry, you must project forward 5 years and ask yourself, what skills, abilities, and competences must we have 5 years from now in order to be one of the top companies? When you have clear future intent, future orientation, it becomes much easier for you to think with greater clarity, to make those decisions today that will enable you to achieve your long-term goals. The critical word in long-term perspective is sacrifice. Successful people are willing to sacrifice, to delay immediate gratification in the present, in the short term, to enjoy greater rewards in the future, in the long term. Without the willpower and discipline to engage in short-term pain for long-term gain, you will have little chance of success. The retirement crisis. Today in America and in other countries, we have what economists call a looming retirement crisis. 10,000 members of the baby boomer generation are reaching retirement age in the United States alone each day. According to the New York Times, the average savings of a married couple reaching retirement is only $104,000. This amount has to last for 15 to 20 years in retirement. At a withdrawal rate of 4%, which is recommended, the average retired couple can draw down $4,160 per year, $346 per month, for the rest of their lives, plus Social Security. And $104,000 is the median size of accumulated savings. 50% of retirees are above that number, and 50% are below. Some retirees have no money at all saved up. How could this happen in the most affluent country in all of human history? The answer is clear: lack of time perspective. Millions of people got into the habit early of spending everything they earned and often more throughout their lives. Today, fully 70% of adults live from paycheck to paycheck. They have nothing left over. They complain that they have too much month at the end of the money. They were and are lulled into believing that their spendthrift habits would never catch up with them. The millionaire next door. Many millionaires and multimillionaires today are average middle-class earners, living in average homes in average neighborhoods. Many of them are teachers, truck drivers, and salespeople. But they save 10 to 15% of their income throughout their working lives and are now wealthy and comfortable. With the miracle of compounding, an investment of $100 per month from age 21 to age 65, at 7 or 8%, the average growth of the stock market for 80 years, would amount to more than $1 million in savings. The development of long-time perspective of projecting into the future 5 or 10 years or even longer changes the way you think and act in the present. Double your income. In Cameron Harold's book, Double Double, in 2011, he shows you how to double the size of your business in 3 years. His message is simple. He advises you to project forward 3 years into the future and decide to earn twice as much as you are earning today by that time. This amounts to an increase of 25% per year compounded. Then work back to the present and determine the exact steps you will have to take to achieve this goal. If you increase your income or grow your business by 2% per month, 26% per year, you will double it in 3 years. If you are working and you increase your productivity, performance, and output by 0.5% per week, this will translate into 2% per month, 26% per year, and a doubling of your income within 36 months. Back from the future. The starting point of developing long-time perspective is for you to practice back-from-the-future thinking. Imagine you could wave a magic wand and make your life perfect sometime in the future. What would your perfect life look like? How would it be different from today? Then come back to the present and ask, what would have to happen, starting today, for me to create my perfect life sometime in the future? Practice idealization. Imagine that there are no limits on what you can accomplish sometime in the future. Analyze your life in the four most important areas. 1. Business and career. 2. Family and relationships. 3. Health and fitness. And 4. Financial independence. Project forward 5 years and imagine that your business, career, and income are ideal in every way. How much would you be earning? What sort of work would you be doing? Where would you be in your career? What kinds of people would you be working with? Your 5-year fantasy. Peter Drucker said, "People often overestimate what they can accomplish in 1 year, but they greatly underestimate what they could accomplish in 5 years." Once you are clear about what your ideal career and income would be 5 years in the future, look back to the present and decide the steps you will have to take to get from where you are today to where you want to be in the future. Then, take the first step. The good news is that you can always see the first step. You don't have to see every step on the staircase to begin climbing. You just have to take the first step. And when you take the first step, the second step will appear. And when you take the second step, the third step will appear. You will always be able to see one step ahead, and that's all you need. But you must take the first step. Confucius said a journey of 1,000 leagues begins with the first step. The first step is always the hardest. It requires tremendous determination and willpower for you to do something more and different than you've ever done before. But once you take the first step, the second step is easier, and then the third step. Soon, you find yourself moving steadily forward, accomplishing more in a few months than you might have accomplished in past years. Your family and relationships. Wave your magic wand again and imagine that your family and relationships were ideal in every way. What would they look like? Whom would you be with? Whom would you no longer be with? If you were married, what kind of a home and lifestyle would you have with your family? What sorts of vacations would you take? And what kind of a life would you want to provide for your family? Then look back from the future to where you are today and ask, what would have to happen, starting today, for me to create my ideal life sometime in the future? Excellent physical health. Think about your health and fitness. If your health was perfect sometime in the future, how would it be different from today? What level of fitness would you enjoy? How much would you weigh? What sort of diet would you eat? What sort of exercise regime would you be following? What kind of rest and relaxation would you practice, including vacations? Then come back to the present and ask, what would have to happen for me to enjoy superb health and fitness sometime in the future? Then take the first step. Do something, do anything, step out in faith, and you can always see the first step. Financial freedom. The fourth area of concern is your achievement of financial freedom, financial independence. Project forward into the future and ask, how much money would I need to have to be comfortable sometime in the future? In my seminars with business owners, we teach the concept of the number, which is also the name of an excellent book on the same subject. It simply asks, what is your number? What is the specific amount that you want to earn, save, invest, and accumulate over the course of your working lifetime? Especially, how much will you need to support your lifestyle on a month-to-month and year-to-year basis? There's a simple formula for financial independence. First, determine exactly how much it would cost you to support your current lifestyle for 1 month if you had no income at all. More than 70% of adults are unsure and unclear about exactly how much it costs them to live on a month-to-month basis. Annual expenses. Once you have determined your monthly requirements, which may take a bit of investigation into your current expenses, regular and unexpected, you multiply this number by 12 to determine how much you would have to have saved up or invested if you had no income for an entire year. If you need $5,000 per month after taxes to support your current lifestyle, multiplied by 12, you would need $60,000 per year to be comfortable if you had no income at all. Finally, multiply your annual amount by 20, the approximate number of years that you and your spouse are going to live after you retire. To continue with this example, if you need $60,000 per year to live comfortably, multiplied by 20, you would need $1.2 million to retire at your current standard of living. You can deduct any pensions that you might have coming from your monthly annual requirement. Take the first step. Then take the first step. Open a retirement account, a financial freedom account. This is an account into which you deposit money and never take it out for any reason. Seek out the services of a financial advisor. Learn to live on 85 to 90% of your income and save or invest the balance. Set this as one of the most important goals of your life to achieve financial independence and hit your number at a specific time in the years ahead. The very act of determining your number, making a plan to achieve it, and taking action on your plan, and then continuously saving and investing, will increase the probability that you achieve that number sometime in the future by as much as 10 times. Make a decision. Resolve today to develop long-time perspective. Become intensely future-oriented. Think about the future most of the time. Consider the consequences of your decisions and actions. What is likely to happen? And then what could happen? And then what? Practice self-discipline, self-mastery, and self-control. Be willing to pay the price today to enjoy the rewards of a better future tomorrow. And then take the first step. The dividing line between success and failure is not good intentions, hopes, wishes, and dreams. It is deciding what you want in each key area of your life and then taking the first step. And you can always see the first step. Now here are three action exercises for you. Number one, resolve today to think long-term, to consider the likely consequences of a decision before you act. Number two, project forward 3 to 5 years and imagine that your life was ideal in every way. How would it be different from today? And action exercise number three is decide upon one action that you are going to take immediately to create your ideal future. And then, take the first step. Chapter 2. Slow Thinking versus Fast Thinking. Albert Gray once said, "The successful person has developed the habit of doing things failures don't like to do. They don't like doing them either, necessarily, but their disliking is subordinated to the strength of their purpose." Your mind is extraordinary. You have the capacity to think more thoughts than all the molecules in the known universe. By properly focusing the powers of your mind on any goal or desire you have, you can accomplish extraordinary things and often far faster than you realize. Your mind races continually. Your stream of consciousness is about 1,500 words per minute. Your mind jumps from one thought to another and then back again. It takes tremendous discipline and willpower for you to control and constrain this onrushing river of thought and to channel it in such a way as to enable you to accomplish all that is possible for you. As it happens, you can think hundreds of thoughts in a row, but you can only think one thought at a time. Because of this, you have the ability to take control of this stream of consciousness and focus your thinking like a sniper on one thought, one target at a time. The reactive responsive mode. Whatever you do repeatedly becomes a habit. The majority of people operate in a reactive responsive mode. They have developed the habit of reacting and responding continually to what is going on around them and within them, with very little deliberate reasoned thought. From the first ring of the alarm clock, they are largely reacting and responding to stimuli from their environment and to their habitual or momentary impulses and appetites. The normal thinking process is almost instantaneous. Stimulus, then immediate response, with no time in between. The superior thinking process is also triggered by stimulus, but between the stimulus and the response, there is a moment or more, a period where you think before you respond. Just like your mother always told you to count to 10 before you respond, especially when you are upset or angry. The very act of stopping to think before you say or do anything almost always improves the quality of your ultimate response. It is an indispensable requirement for success. It is also a quality of wealthy people. Thinking is hard work. Thomas J. Watson Sr., the founder of IBM, required that there be signs on every office wall that said, "Think." Whenever they had a problem to deal with in the early days, someone would point to the sign to remind his coworkers that the more they took time to think carefully about the subject under discussion, the more likely they were to come up with a proper solution or decision. Thomas Edison once said, "Thinking is the hardest work of all," which is why most people avoid it at all costs. There is a saying, there are those who think, there are those who think they think, and then there is the vast majority who would rather die than think. Good thinking is hard work. It must be learned and practiced over and over if you are going to truly plumb the depths of your mental powers. Fortunately, whatever you do repeatedly soon becomes a habit. Once it becomes a habit, it functions easily and automatically. Goethe said, "Everything is hard before it's easy." This definitely applies to new habit formation. Slow thinking. One of the best habits you can develop is to practice thinking slowly in those areas where slow thinking is required. As we discussed in Chapter 1, the important factor is consequences. Almost all of the mistakes we make in life come from not carefully considering the consequences of our actions beforehand. Daniel Kahneman's best-selling book, Thinking, Fast and Slow, is a major contribution to accurate thinking. Similar to the classic Straight and Crooked Thinking by R.H. Toulis and C.R. Toulis, Kahneman's book explores and explains many of the reasons why we come to false conclusions which lead to actions that fail to achieve the results we desire. The authors show how we accept information and make decisions based on partial information, selective statistics, or confirmation bias, seeking for information that agrees with what we have already decided to believe. The common conclusion of these studies into poor or sloppy thinking is the necessity of slowing down before we make a decision that can have significant positive or negative consequences in our lives and work. One of the simplest ways to do this is to continually ask, "How do we know this is true?" before we accept a piece of information as the basis for a decision. Two thinking styles. The two thinking styles contrasted are fast thinking and slow thinking. With fast thinking, we process information quickly, intuitively, automatically, instinctively, like making decisions while driving a car in busy traffic. We react and respond with little thought or consideration. For most of our activities, such as conversations, meetings, navigating daily life, or grocery shopping, fast thinking is both appropriate and necessary. The consequences are not important, such as whether you order a hamburger or a fish burger for lunch. It doesn't really matter in the great scheme of things. For many other areas of life, slow thinking is more necessary and even essential if we are to make the right long-term decisions that yield us the consequences we desire. Here was Kahneman's insight that was central to making his book a bestseller, and deservedly so. He said that the biggest mistake that most people make is that they use fast thinking in making long-term vital decisions where slow thinking is much more appropriate. Consider the consequences. For example, decisions about the courses you take at college, what career path you embark upon, the person you marry, and how you earn, save, and invest your money, all require slow thinking. The more important a decision can be to you in the long term, the more important it is that you slow down, call a timeout, and carefully consider both the facts and your options. In starting and building a business, slow thinking is absolutely essential in certain areas. Which product or service you specialize in, which customer segment you aim at, and which methods of production, sales, marketing, and distribution you select, and your cost and pricing decisions are all vital to the success or failure of the enterprise. Analyze your way of thinking. From now on, ask yourself on a regular basis, does this situation require fast or slow thinking? Buy time for yourself whenever possible. Put as long a gap as possible between the stimulus and the response, between the thought and the decision. Practice the 72-hour rule. Give yourself or buy yourself 72 hours or 3 days to consider a major decision before you make it. Lord Acton wrote, "If it is not necessary to decide, it is necessary not to decide." The longer you take to make an important decision, the better that decision will be in almost every case. Continually use the words, "Let me think about it and get back to you." If someone tries to pressure you into making a decision on an important issue, you can say, "If you insist on an answer immediately, the answer is no. But if you let me think about it for a while, the answer might be different." Write down the details. Think on paper. One of the most powerful thinking tools of all is a sheet of paper upon which you write down every detail of the problem or decision. Something amazing happens between the head and the hand when you write things down. When you write out all the details, you are forced to think slowly and meticulously, especially when you write by hand rather than typing. Often, as you write fact after fact, it becomes clearer and clearer to you what you should do. This is why Francis Bacon wrote, "Writing maketh an exact man." Whenever the potential consequences of an action or decision are significant, buy yourself as much time as you possibly can. Your final decision will always be better than if you decided quickly. People decisions. Fully 95% of business success, by some estimates, will be determined by the quality of the people whom you attract, assign, appoint, and delegate the work to. The people you choose to work with and the people who choose you can make or break a business. This is why Peter Drucker wrote that fast people decisions are invariably wrong people decisions. The people you choose to work with or for, to socialize with or marry, to invest through or going to business with, will determine about 85% of your success and happiness in your personal life. The secret of hiring. The top sales manager for a large company who is famous for having hired many of the best salespeople in that company was once asked his secret to hiring success. He said, "Simple. I practice the 30-day rule. No matter how much I like the candidate, I discipline myself to wait 30 days before I make a final decision. As I meet and talk with a candidate, a person who may look excellent in the first or second meeting often starts to reveal weaknesses and character flaws that make him or her completely inappropriate over the long term." Most successful companies and managers practice different versions of this rule. They realize that the consequences of a bad hire can be very expensive. This principle applies to business partnerships and deals as well. Think strategically. Of the many management techniques that have come in and out of fashion over the years, strategic planning is always ranked as number one in enduring importance. In strategic planning, you are forced to think slowly, to carefully consider the likely consequences of any action or decision. You are designing the long-term future of your business. In personal strategic planning, it is the same. You design your own future. You think far into the future to determine where you want to be in the years ahead. As Michael Kami, the strategic expert, wrote, "Those who do not plan for the future cannot have one." Personal strategic planning forces you to think slowly, with greater precision and accuracy. It forces you to think about what you really want to be, have, do, and accomplish in the months and years ahead. It's often a good idea for you to block out chunks of time, even a day or two, to think about your future, especially in times of change, turbulence, and disruption. Go for a long walk and let your mind relax. Discuss your future goals with your spouse. Take 2 or 3 days off where you disconnect from all electronic devices, including your computer, smartphone, telephones, text messages, and any other electronic interruptions that can disrupt the flow of your thinking. Practice solitude. One of the most powerful of all ways to practice slow thinking is for you to practice solitude on a regular basis. Many people have never practiced solitude even once in their entire lives. They have an insatiable need to be busy and active, filling every possible minute with stimuli of some kind. But this is not for you. The practice of solitude is quite simple. It requires that you take a minimum of 30 to 60 minutes by yourself in the silence, with no music or distractions, and simply sit there quietly with no noise or activity. You can sit quietly in nature, in a park where there's no noise. Perhaps the best mental state for solitude is to think about water. Sitting and looking at a body of water, even a swimming pool, seems to relax your mind and unlock your subconscious and superconscious capabilities. Solitude requires discipline. When you first practice solitude, you will find it extremely difficult. You will fidget and think of things that you could get up and do. You'll almost always have to hold yourself down for the first 20 to 25 minutes. But at that point, something wonderful will happen. All of your tension and stress will begin to drain away, and you will feel completely relaxed. You'll start to enjoy the sensation of simply sitting in the silence. And at this point, your mind will begin to flow with thoughts, ideas, insights, perspectives, solutions to problems, and other inspirations, any one of which can change your life. Just let your mind flow like a river. You don't need to write anything down. If it's a good idea, it will remain with you after your period of solitude. It is said that men and women begin to become great when they begin to take time apart with themselves in the silence. If you have never practiced 30 to 60 minutes of solitude, make an appointment with yourself for your first session. Often, I would stop my car in a park on the way home in the late afternoon and sit quietly for an hour. You may stay at the office until after everyone has left. You may sit in your backyard or your upstairs bedroom where it's completely silent. It works every time. Here's my promise to you. Whenever you have a problem, difficulty, obstacle, frustration, or challenge in your life, go into the silence and sit quietly. The very first time you do this, almost without exception, the answer to your biggest problem will come to you, almost like a butterfly alighting on your shoulder. Many of my students report to me that problems that had concerned them for weeks or months were almost instantly resolved by their first practice of a session in solitude. When your answer comes, it will be complete in every respect. It will answer every detail of the problem or difficulty. It will be simple, clear, and completely within your capabilities to act. It will solve every detail of the problem. When you arise from your period of solitude and put the idea into action, everything will immediately resolve itself. You will be at peace. Unleash your inner powers. The regular practice of solitude requires slow thinking. It requires that you stop all of the business and activity around you and just go into the silence with yourself for a few minutes. The best news is that the more you practice solitude, the faster, better, and more comprehensive will be the answers and ideas that you get from each period. In corporate strategic planning, where the consequences can be significant, taking the time off to slow down and think through the critical issues can be the action that determines the success or failure of the business. There's a rule in time management that says, every minute spent in planning saves 10 minutes in execution. Whenever you see a successful enterprise, you see a successful strategy in action. You see the result of an extended process of slow and careful thinking. Use the GOSPA thinking model. To help yourself and others slow down and think with greater precision, use the GOSPA model on a regular basis. The acronym GOSPA stands for Goals, Objectives, Strategies, Priorities, and Actions. Goals. Your goals are the specific, measurable, time-bounded results you want to achieve over the longer term in your business. These refer to your targets for sales, profitability, growth, share price, and quality rankings. Objectives. Your objectives are the interim goals that you will have to achieve to accomplish your major goals. Imagine your goals are what exists at the top of the ladder, your long-term aims, and your objectives are the rungs of the ladder that you must climb to achieve them. Strategies. Your strategies are the various ways that you could accomplish each objective. For example, in business, one of your objectives will be to achieve a certain level of sales. There are a variety of different strategies that you can use to achieve your sales objectives. Priorities. Your priorities are those activities that are more important than others in achieving your goals and objectives. Apply the 80-20 rule to everything. What are the top 20% of actions that you can take that can account for 80% of your results? Actions. What specific, measurable, time-bounded activities must you take to implement your strategies, achieve your objectives, and accomplish